"You all make so many excuses," Calamity said. "You refuse to see what your people are, once they get a little power." He looked at me. "What you are, David Charleston. You have hidden it from the others, but you cannot fool the Source himself. I know what you are. When will you release it? When will you destroy, as is your destiny?"
"I never will."
"Nonsense! It is your nature. I have seen it over and over again." He stepped toward me. "How did you do it? How did you hold me off so long?"
"Is that why you came to us?" I asked. "In Eldithia? Because of me?"
Calamity glowered at me.
Even now, even seeing him in his glory, I had the same impression of him I'd always had. That of a great spoiled child.
"Calamity," I said, "you have to go.
Leave us."
He sniffed. "I'm not allowed to go until my work is done. They made that clear after I..."
"What?"
"I do not see you answering the questions I gave you," he said, then turned back to look out his window. "Why have you denied your powers?"
I licked my lips, heart thumping. "I can't be an epic," I said. "My father was waiting for them."
"So?"
I trailed off. I couldn't voice it.
11 years, and still your kind lingers," Calamity muttered. "Dwindling, yes, but also lingering. 10 years as a child I lived among you, until I fled to this place."
That's when Calamity rose, I thought, when he was 10, and when he decided to start giving away powers.
"This place," Calamity said, "which is closer to my home than anything else in this rotten realm. But I found I had to start going down again among you. I had to know. What did you see in all of this? 11 years more and I haven't been able to find it."
I looked down at the thin detonator rod still clenched in my hand. I had my answers. They raised more questions, true. What was the place he had come from? Why did his kind seek to destroy us? He acted like it was predetermined, but by who and why? Questions I would probably never see answered. My single regret was that I hadn't said goodbye to Megan. I would have liked one last farewell kiss. "My name is David Charleston." I clicked the button. "And I kill epics." The bomb detonated. 49. The explosion ripped through the glass space station, shattering it to pieces. The heat and force hit me in an instant, then curved around me. It streamed into Calamity's outstretched palm, sucked like water through a straw. It was over in an eye blink. Behind me, the station re-knit itself, glass forming back together, resealing. I stood like an idiot, clicking the button again and again.
"You thought," Calamity said without looking at me, "that my own power could destroy me. I suppose there would be a poetry to that, but I am master of the powers, David. I know them all in their intricacy. Yes, I could tell you how Eldithia works. Yes, I could explain what Megan does in jumping to other realms, both core possibilities and ones ephemeral. But I am truly immortal. None of the powers could harm me, not permanently."
I sank to the floor. The strain of it all overwhelmed me. The fight with Prof, being stolen away by obliteration, pressing that button and being prepared to die.
I've wondered if I should simply tell them,
Calamity mused, and turned to me.
You should understand that you need to destroy yourselves. But you see, I am not supposed to interfere. Even the small infractions, like being forced to make devices for your assault on Sharp Tower, worry me. It is against our way, though maintaining my cover required it.
Calamity, you're already interfering. Deeply. You make them go mad. You make them destroy.
He ignored me.
Sparks, how could I get him to see? How could I show him that he was causing the darkness and destruction, that men wouldn't take to it as naturally as he claimed?
You are worthless as a whole,
he said softly.
You will destroy yourselves, and I will bear witness. I will not shirk my duty as others have. We are to watch, as is our calling. But I must not interfere, not again. The acts of youth can be forgiven. Though I was never truly a child, I was new. And your world is a shock. A dreadful shock.
He nodded, as if convincing himself. I forced myself to stand. Then I slipped my gun from its holster on my leg.
Your answer to everything, David Charleston,
Calamity said with a sigh. Worth a try, I said, raising the gun.
I contain the very powers of the universe. Do you understand that? They are all mine. I am what you call a high epic 1,000 times over.
You're a monster either way, I said. Divine powers don't make you a god, I guess. They make you a bully who happens to have the biggest gun. I pulled the trigger. The gun didn't even fire.
I removed the powder, Calamity noted. Nothing you can possibly do, whether the result of epic powers or the craftiness of man, can hurt me.
He hesitated.
You, however, have no such protections.
I said. Then I ran.
Really?
He asked after me.
This is what we're doing.
I tore out of the room, scrambling back the way I'd come, which was tough considering that this place had been made for people who moved in freefall, not people who walked. I reached the room where I'd first arrived. Dead end. Calamity sprang into existence near me. I swallowed, my mouth dry. Non-interference, right?
Of course, David,
Calamity said.
Though you did break the station, I needn't save you from the natural result of your actions. This place can be so fragile.
He smiled. I lunged for a hand grip on the floor. Just in time, as a large hole opened in the side of the room. The wind howled.
Goodbye, David Charleston,
Calamity said, strolling over to kick at my fingers. Light flashed in the room. Then, someone punched Calamity square in the face, sending him sprawling. The rushing of air stopped, and I gasped in a huge breath, looking up at the newcomer. Prof! He wore his black lab coat and no longer bore the vacant look that had been in his eyes when I'd left him. It was replaced by an expression of determination and sheer grit.
You, Calamity said, sprawled on his back. I reclaimed the powers from you.
Prof pulled apart his lab coat. There, strapped to his chest, was the vest that Nighthawk had made, quickly repaired. Motivators replaced.
Useless, Calamity said. If I reclaimed them, that shouldn't work.
He looked befuddled at the force field on the wall, which glowed green. Prof offered me his hand. I let out a long sigh of relief. How do you feel? I asked, taking the hand. Haunted, he whispered. Thank you for bringing me back.
I hate you for it, David. But thank you.
I didn't bring you back, I said. You faced it, Prof.
I suddenly understood. In strapping on the motivators and trying to take up his powers again after what had happened, he'd faced them. He'd come to risk failure. He'd done it.
He'd claimed the powers. Like Megan, he'd ripped the darkness from the abilities and sent one sprawling away while seizing the others.
Prof's powers were now his and not Calamity's. The motivator boxes were meaningless.
Prof grabbed me, perhaps intending to teleport us away, but a sudden wave of something slammed into us, sending us sprawling. Calamity started glowing again, a harsh red light, and he spoke.
Sparks, that voice! Inhuman! Unreal!
Something tumbled from Prof's hand, and it vaporized as Calamity pointed.
What was that? I asked over the terrible screeching that was now Calamity's voice, speaking a language I couldn't conceive.
That was our way out, Prof said. Run.
The teleporter.
Hell. I scrambled to my feet as Prof placed a force field between us and Calamity, but it was gone in a heartbeat. Fighting him was impossible. Some unseen force tossed me to the ground. Calamity glowed and raised his hands, a beam forming, then shooting right toward me. Light flashed again, and the beam missed. Megan stood in the room, holding obliteration by the throat. He appeared to be choking. I gaped in surprise as she tossed the man aside. He vanished a moment later, not in his customary fashion, but just fading away. Megan raised her gun and started firing at Calamity. It still didn't do any good, though Calamity screamed again in that strange language. Megan cursed and dropped down to a crouch beside me.
Plan? She asked.
Megan, how did you...
Easy, she said, firing again. Grabbed the obliteration from the other dimension, showed him the picture of this place, and made him take me up here. He's still a slonce there, I'll have you know. Now, plan?
Plan. Sometimes you don't know what you need until you're in the thick of it.
Send us both, I said, stumbling to my feet. Send Calamity and me into Firefight's world, but not out in space. Please, send us to Firefight, wherever he is.
David, Calamity will kill you.
Please, Megan, please. Trust me.
She drew her lips to a line, and as I lurched toward Calamity in the shaking room, she released her powers. I grabbed him, and together the two of us slipped into another place.
50. We stumbled onto a rooftop in Eldithia, near a gaping hole smoldering in the ground. Night had fallen. Darkness covered the Salt City, but I recognized the location. It was above where I'd faced down Prof at the end. At first, I thought something had gone wrong. Had we really entered another dimension? But there were differences. Here, the hole looked like it had been made by an explosion, rather than by the tensors. There were also far fewer bodies. I turned and found that Calamity was standing there growling at me. He raised his hands, summoning light.
I can show you, I whispered, what it is we see in the earth.
You say you're curious. I can show you something you will wish to see. I promise.
He sneered at me, but as I watched, his rage seemed to subside, like an epic when their powers retreated.
You're curious, I said. I know you are. Don't you want to understand, finally, so that your curiosity will stop nagging at you?
Bah, he said, but lowered his hands and transformed into Larsener. Well, he'd always been Larsener, but he'd stopped glowing. His skin had returned to a human tone, and his robe had transformed to the shirt and slacks he often wore.
What do you think to do here,
he demanded, looking around.
This is another core possibility, isn't it? One adjacent to yours? You realize I can just send us back.
Specs, Firefight's voice said. I twisted to find him on the next rooftop over, standing near Tavi. She remained behind, studying me while Firefight jumped, gliding across the open space, trailing flames.
He's here,
Firefight said, obviously speaking into a mobile. How had he found one that didn't burn up?
Yes, him.
Can you summon the person who wants to meet me?
I asked Firefight, glancing toward Calamity.
Oh, don't worry, Firefight said. He's coming.
There is something strange about this place, Calamity said, looking up and squinting at the sky. Something wrong.
It's a world that you left, Calamity, I said. It's a world where some epics don't destroy, where some protect and fight against those who would kill.
Impossible, he spun on me. Lies.
You know your powers, I said. You know what Megan does. You told me yourself you are their master. Before, you demanded that I deny what I was. Well, I don't. Not anymore. I'm one of you. Now you do it. I dare you to deny what you're seeing. Deny that this place, this possibility exists.
He seemed bewildered. He looked up at the dark sky where Calamity should have been.
Powerful spotlights lit the area nearby, where people searched for survivors in the aftermath of whatever conflict Firefight and his team had faced. Down below, when people saw him standing near me, they cheered. Sparks, they cheered, an epic.
No,
Calamity said. He looked at Firefight, then the people.
This one must. He must be an anomaly, like your Megan.
Is that so? I said, scanning the area. I spotted a figure rising from the city, the figure I'd been waiting for. He streaked toward us, cape fluttering behind, an outfit I knew all too well. I seized Calamity by the front of his clothing.
Look at it, I said. Look at a place where the epics are free from your corruption. Look at the one who comes, the most terrible of them all. A murderer in our world. A destroyer. Look and see that here, Calamity. Steelheart himself is a hero.
I thrust my hand to the side as the figure landed on the rooftop.
That, Calamity said. That is not Steelheart.
What? I looked at the figure again. Magnificent silver cape, baggy black pants. A shirt stretched taut across a powerful physique. It was Steelheart's costume, though it now bore a symbol on the chest. That was the only difference in the clothing. But his face was that of a kindly man, not a tyrant. Round features, thinning hair, a wide smile, and such understanding eyes. Blaine Charleston.
My father.
51.
My David,
Father whispered.
My little David. I couldn't speak. I couldn't move. It was him. In this world, my father was an epic. No, in this world, my father was the epic.
He took a hesitant step forward. Such a timid action for one who bore the musculature, stature, and regal air of a powerful epic.
Oh, son. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I released Calamity, stunned. Father took another step forward. Then I seized him in an embrace. It all came out. The worry, the terror, the frustration and mind-numbing exhaustion. It poured out in heaving sobs. I released over a decade of pain and sorrow, a decade of loss. He held me tight. And he smelled like my father, epic or not. "Son," he said, clutching me, weeping. "I killed you. I didn't mean to. I tried to protect you, to save you. But you died. You died anyway." "I let you die," I whispered. "I didn't help you, didn't stand up. I watched him murder you. I was a coward." Our words became a jumble as we spoke. But for a moment, somehow, everything was all right. I was in my father's arms. Impossible, yet true.
"But it is him," Calamity whispered from behind. "I can see the powers. The same powers."
I finally released my father, though he kept a grip on my arm, protective. Calamity stared at the sky again. "You brought him here," my father said. Calamity nodded absently. "Thank you, hero," my father said, speaking with a confidence I hadn't known in him since before Mother's death. "Thank you for giving me this gift. You must be a mighty man of compassion in your realm." Calamity looked at us, frowning, from my father to me and back.
"By the eternal sparks," Calamity whispered, "I see it."
I felt the fading sensation. Megan's power was running out, and we would soon return. I grabbed my father again. "I'm going," I said. "I don't have a choice, but, Father, I forgive you. Know that I forgive you." It didn't need to be said, yet I knew that I had to say it.
"I forgive you," Father said, tears in his eyes. "My David, it is enough to know that somewhere you still live."
The world faded, and with it my father. I anticipated pain, a lurching, a tearing away. But I felt only peace. He was right. It was enough. Calamity and I reappeared on the glass space station. Megan and Proth stood at the ready, her with her gun, Proth with spears of light. I raised my hands to still them. Calamity remained in his human form. He didn't change back. He simply knelt on that glass floor, staring sightlessly. A small red glow finally started to rise from him, and he looked at us.
"You are evil,"
he said, almost a plea. "I am not," Megan said.
"You will. You will destroy everything," he said.
"No," Prof said, his voice rough. "No."
Calamity focused on me, standing with the other two. "Your corruption isn't enough," I said. "Your fears are not enough. Your hatred is not enough." "We won't do it, Calamity." He wrapped his arms around himself and began to rock. "Do you know what made the difference?" I demanded of him. "The reason our powers separated from yours?" "The same thing happened with all of us. Megan running into a burning building. Me entering the ocean. Edmund with the dog. And Prof coming here. It wasn't only confronting the fears."
"It was pushing through them," Calamity whispered, looking from me to the others. "To save someone."
"Do you fear that?" I asked him softly. "That we aren't what you've thought? Does it terrify you to know that deep down, men are not monsters? that we are instead inherently good? He stared at me, then collapsed, curling up on the glass floor. The red light within him dimmed, and then, just like that, he faded away until there was nothing.
"Did we kill him?" Megan asked.
"Close enough," I said. The station rumbled, then lurched.
"I knew this thing was too low for such an orbital speed," Prof shouted. "Sparks, we need to call Tia and..."
He grew pale. The entire station lurched, throwing us to the ceiling. Calamity had been holding it in place. It started to crack, glass all around spiderwebbing from the internal pressure. In seconds, we were plummeting toward the Earth, the station shattering around us. But I was calm. For in that other world, my father's shirt had borne a symbol. A symbol I recognized. A stylized S shape. A symbol that meant something. The symbol of the faithful. There will be heroes. Just wait. I seized the power within me.
Epilogue.
I sat on the hillside, resting in the shadow of the fallen space station, which I'd transformed to steel as we fell. I'd made the transformation, then exited through one of the holes in its side. I'd grabbed hold, slowing it, then guided it out of its death spiral and eventually placed it here. Well, crashed it here. Turns out flying is way harder than people think. In the air, I was about as adroit as 17 geriatric walruses trying to juggle live swordfish. Might need to work on that one. Megan walked over, looking radiant as always, despite the bruises from the, smoothness-challenged landing. She sat down and squeezed my arm. "So," she said, "you going to get super buff?" "Dunno," I said, flexing. "Steelheart was. And my father is. Might come with the portfolio." "Should make up for the terrible kissing." "Hey, all you have to do to fix that is let me practice." "Noted." We were somewhere in Australia, according to Nighthawk, who was sending a copter for us. It would be hours before it arrived. I wasn't about to trust my flying skills to get us back to North America. I nodded toward the other hillside. "How is he?"
"Bad," Megan said, looking toward Prof's silhouette, where he sat staring into the sky. "He'll have to live with it, as I do. The things we've done while consumed by the darkness. Well, they feel like our own actions. Dreamlike, sometimes, but still our choice. You can remember enjoying it, too."
She shivered, and I pulled her close. After this, Prof would never be the same. But then would any of us? "His powers still work?" I said. "Like yours do?" She nodded, glancing at her mobile. "Abraham and Cody are doing well, though Prof will need to regrow Abraham's arm, and, you should read this." She showed me a message she had pulled up from Nighthawk.
"Mizzy?"
I asked. Megan nodded.
"Sparks.
I wonder how she'll take to being an epic."
"Well, without the darkness," Megan shrugged.
"It was well and truly gone, so far as we could tell." Megan still thought Calamity might return. I didn't. A flash of light appeared in front of us, resolving into a man with spectacles and a goatee wearing a trench coat.
"Ah," Obliteration said. "You are here."
He tucked away the mobile he'd been carrying. Maybe we wouldn't need that copter after all. I took a deep breath and stood, hopeful. I gave Obliteration a smile and reached out my hand to him. He slid his sword from its sheath. Yes, he still had a sword, and pointed it at me.
You have done well, and blessed are you, for you have cast the dragon from his heaven. I will give you a week to recover. My next target is Toronto. You may face me there, and we shall see what comes of our clash, horseman.
Obliteration, I said, pleading. Calamity is gone.
Yes, he said, sheathing his sword.
The darkness is gone, I said. You don't have to be evil.
I'm not, he said. I thank you for giving me the secrets you know, Steel Slayer. I know why the darkness left me 5 years ago, when I faced my fear. I have been free of it ever since. He nodded to me. And he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims, and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the Tree of Life. He flashed into white ceramic, and vanished.
Calamity, I said, slumping back down, frustrated. Calamity!
You know, Megan said, we might need to think of new curses.
I had hoped maybe on our side he would be good, once Calamity was gone.
They're people, Megan said. Free to be people, David, as it should be. And that means some of them are still going to be selfish, or messed up, or whatever.
She settled closer to me.
I'm feeling rested, and am up for some exertion.
I grinned.
Practice!
She rolled her eyes. Not that I'm averse, knees, but I was referring to my powers.
Oh, right. I knew that.
You still want to try this? She asked.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be waiting.
All right. Sit still.
A moment later, I was back in the other world. I'd returned once already. Just after we'd landed the space station, I'd popped in to let them know that my visit before hadn't been the end, but I'd stayed only for a moment. Megan had been tired. Before I'd left, though, I'd arranged this meeting place. My father stood on top of a building, Sharp Tower, which hadn't been destroyed in his world. I walked up to him, noting his fluttering cape.
Look what those comic books have done to you.
Wearing a symbol and everything. Sparks, he was such a nerd. Like father, like son, I guess.
He saw me and turned around with a wide smile of his own. I stepped toward him, hesitant. 11 years. A long time to catch up on. How did one begin?
I said. Megan feels she's getting better at this, and the darkness is gone, so she can last longer. Now that she's rested and isn't in the middle of a catastrophe or anything, she thinks she can give us a good 15 minutes. Maybe as long as a half hour.
Good. Good, Father said.
He shuffled awkwardly.
Firefight tells me that you and I share a power set.
Yeah, I said. Power blasts? Invulnerability? Oh, and turning stuff into steel. Not sure how useful that last one will be.
You'd be surprised, he said.
It's still going to take some getting used to. And by the way, flying is kind of kicking me in the face.
Flying is tricky at first.
We stood in front of one another, uncertain, until Father nodded toward the railing.
Do you, want me to teach you?
I smiled, feeling a sudden warmth deep inside. Dad, I can think of nothing I'd like more.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Mitosis, A Reckoner Story, Book 4 in the Reckoner series, free.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Calamity, written by Brandon Sanderson, narrated by McLeod Andrews. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 by Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2016 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Mitosis, a Reckoner story, book 4 in the Reckoner series.
1. The day had finally arrived, a day I'd been awaiting for 10 years. A glorious day, a momentous day, a day of import and distinction. It was time to buy a hot dog. Someone was in line when we arrived, but I didn't cut in front of her. She would have let me. I was one of the Reckoners, leaders of the rebellion, defenders of the city of Newcago, slayers of Steelheart himself. But standing in line was part of the experience, and I didn't want to skip a moment. Newcago extended around me, a city of skyscrapers, underpasses, shops, and streets, all frozen permanently in steel. Recently, Tia had started an initiative to paint some of those surfaces. Now that the city's perpetual gloom had been dispelled, it turned out all those reflective surfaces could make things really bright. With some work, instead of looking the same everywhere, the city would eventually become a patchwork of reds, oranges, greens, whites, and purples. Abraham, my companion for this hot dog excursion, followed my gaze, then grimaced.
It would be nice if when we painted the wall, we would take a little more concern for colors that matched those of their neighbors.
Tall and dark-skinned, Abraham spoke with a light French accent. As he talked, he scanned the people walking nearby, studying each one in his trademark relaxed yet discerning way. The butt of a handgun poked from his hip holster. We Reckoners weren't technically police. I wasn't sure what we were, but whatever it was, it involved weapons, and I had my rifle over my shoulder. Newcago was almost kind of peaceful, now that we'd dealt with the rioters. But you couldn't count on peace lasting long, not with epics out there. "We have to use the paint we can find," I said.
"It's, garish,"
I shrugged. "I like it. The colors are different. Not like the city was before Calamity, but also a big change from how it was under Steelheart. They make the city look like a big chessboard. One painted a lot of colors."
"Or perhaps a quilt?" Abraham asked, sounding amused.
"Sure, I suppose. If you want to use a boring metaphor." "A quilt. Why hadn't I thought of that?" The woman in front of us wandered off with her hot dog, and I stepped up to the stand, a small metal cart with a transformed steel umbrella permanently frozen open. The vendor, Sam, was an elderly, bearded man who wore a small red and white hat. He grinned at us.
"For you, half price," he said, whipping up 2 hot dogs. Chicago style, of course.
"Half price," Abraham said. "Saving the world does not inspire the gratitude it once did."
"A man has to make a living," Sam said, slathering on condiments. Like, a lot of them. Yellow mustard, onions, chunked tomatoes, sweet pickle relish, peppers, whole, of course, and pickled, a dill pickle slice, and a pinch of celery salt. Just like I remembered. A true Chicago dog looks like someone fired a bazooka at a vegetable stand, then scraped the remnants off the wall and slathered it on a tube of meat. I took mine greedily. Abraham was more skeptical.
Ketchup? Abraham asked.
The vendor's eyes opened wide. "He's not from around here," I said quickly. "No ketchup, Abraham. Aren't you French? You people are supposed to have good taste in food."
"French Canadians do have good taste in food," Abraham said, inspecting the hot dog. "But I am not convinced that this is actually food."
"Just try it." I bit into my dog. Oh, bliss. For a moment, it was as if no time had passed. I was back with my father before everything went bad. I could hear him laughing, could smell the city as it had been back then. Rank at times, yes, but also alive. Full of people talking and laughing and yelling.
Asphalt streets, hot in the summer, as we walked together. People in hockey jerseys. The Blackhawks had just won the cup. It faded around me, and I was back in New Cargo, a steel city. But that moment of tasting it all again, sparks, that was wonderful. I looked up at Sam, and he grinned at me. We couldn't recapture it all. The world was a different place now. But damn it, we could have proper hot dogs again. I turned to look around the city. Nobody else had gotten in line, and people passed with eyes cast down. We were at First Union Square, a holy place where a certain bank had once stood. It was also the center of the new city's crossroads. It was a busy location, a prime spot for a hot dog vendor. I set my jaw, then slapped some coins down on Sam's cart.
"Free hot dogs for the first 10 who want them," I shouted.
People looked at us, but nobody came over. When some of them saw me watching, they lowered their eyes and continued on. Sam sighed, crossing his arms on top of his cart.
"Sorry, Steel Slayer. They're too afraid."
"Afraid of hot dogs?" I said.
"Afraid to get comfortable with freedom," Sam said.
Watching a woman rush past and head into the understreets, where most people still lived. Even with sunlight up here now, and no epics to torment them, even with painted walls and colors, they still hid below.
"They think the epics will return," Abraham said with a nod. "They're waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak."
"They'll change," I said, stubbornly stuffing more of my hot dog into my mouth. I talked around the bite.
"They'll see."
That was what this had all been about, right? Killing Steelheart? It had been to show that we could fight back. Everyone else would understand eventually. They had to. The Reckoners couldn't fight every epic in the country on our own. I nodded to Sam. "Thanks. For what you do." He nodded. It might seem silly, but Sam opening his hot dog stand was one of the most important events this city had seen in 10 years. Some of us fought back with guns and assassinations. Others fought back with a little hot dog stand on the corner.
"We'll see,"
Sam said, pushing away the coins I'd set down. All but 2 nickels to pay for our hot dogs. We'd gone back to using American money, though only the coins, and we valued them much higher. The city government backed them with food stores, at Tia's suggestion. "Keep it all," I said. "Give free hot dogs to the first 10 who come today. We'll change them, Sam. One bite at a time." He smiled, but pocketed the money. As Abraham and I walked off, Tia's voice, terse and distracted, came in over my earpiece. "Do you have a report?" "The dogs are awesome," I said. "Dogs?" she said. "Watchdogs? You've been checking on the city kennels?"
"Young David," Abraham said around a mouthful, "has been instructing me on the local cuisine. They are called hot dogs because they're only good for feeding to animals, yes?"
"You took him to that hot dog stand?" Tia asked. "Weren't you two supposed to be doing greetings?" "Philistines, both of you," I said, cramming the rest of my hot dog into my mouth.
"We are on our way, Tia," Abraham said.
Abraham and I hiked toward the city gates. The new city government had decided to section off the downtown, and had done so by creating barricades out of steel furniture to block some of the streets. It created a decent perimeter of control that helped us keep tabs on who was entering our city. We passed people scuttling about on their business, heads down. Sam was right. Most of the population seemed to think the epics were going to descend upon the city any moment, exacting retribution. In fact, after we'd overthrown Steelheart, a shocking number of people had left the city. That was unfortunate, as we now had a provisional government in place. We had farmers to work the fields outside, and Edmund using his epic abilities to provide free power for the whole place. We even had a large number of former members of Steelheart's enforcement troops recruited to police the city. New Kaga was working as well now as it had under Steelheart. We'd tried to replicate his organization, only without that whole indiscriminate murder of innocence thing. Life was good here, better than anything else in the remnants of the fractured states, for certain. Still, people hid, waited for a disaster. "They will see," I muttered.
"Perhaps," Abraham said, eyeing me.
"Just wait." He shrugged and chewed his last bit of hot dog. He grimaced.
"I do not think I can forgive you for that, David. It was terrible. Tastes should complement one another, not hold all-out war with one another."
"You finished it."
"I did not wish to be impolite."
He grimaced again.
"Truly awful."
We walked in silence until we arrived at the first unbarricaded roadway. Here, members of enforcement processed a line of people wanting to enter. People with New Kaga passports, farmers or scavengers who worked outside of the downtown, went right through. Newcomers, however, were stopped and told to wait for orientation. "Good crowd today," I noted. Some 40 or 50 people waited in the newcomer line. Abraham grunted. The two of us walked up to where a man in black enforcement armor was explaining the city rules to a group in worn, dirty clothing. Most of these people would have spent the last years outside of civilization, dodging epics, surviving as best they could in a land ruled by nested levels of tyrants, like Russian dolls with evil little faces painted on them. Two families among the newcomers, I thought, noting the men and women with children. That encouraged me. As several of the soldiers continued orientation, one of them, Roy, strolled over to me. Like the other soldiers, he wore black armor, but no helmet. Enforcement members were intimidating enough without covering their faces.
"Hey," Roy said.
He was a lanky redhead I'd grown up with. I still hadn't figured out whether he bore a grudge for that time I'd shot him in the leg. "How's this batch?" I asked softly.
"Better than yesterday," Roy said with a grunt. "Fewer opportunists, more genuine immigrants. You can tell the difference when you explain the jobs we need done."
"The opportunists refuse the work?"
"No," Roy said. "They're just too excited, all smiles and eagerness. It's a sham. They plan to get put onto a work detail, then ditch it first chance to see what they can steal. We'll weed them out."
"Be careful," I said. "Don't blacklist someone just because they're optimistic." Roy shrugged. Enforcement was on our side. We controlled the power that ran their weapons and armor, but they too seemed on edge. Steelheart had occasionally used them to fight lesser epics. From what I'd heard, it hadn't gone well for the ordinary humans on either side of such a conflict. These men knew firsthand what it was like to face down epics. If a powerful one decided to step into Steelheart's place, the police force would be worth less than a bag full of snakes at a dance competition. I gave Roy an encouraging slap on the shoulder. The officers finished their orientation, and I joined Abraham, who began introducing himself to the newcomers one at a time. We'd figured out that after enforcement's cheerful welcome of stern gazes, strict rules, and suspicious glances, a little friendly chatting with someone more normal went a long way. I welcomed one of the families, telling them how wonderful New Kaga was and how glad I was they'd come. I didn't tell them specifically who I was, though I implied that I was a liaison between the city's people and the Reckoners. I had the speech down pat by now. As we talked, I saw someone pass to the side. That hair. That figure. I turned immediately, stuttering the last words of my greeting. My heart thundered inside my chest. But it wasn't her. Of course it wasn't her. "You're a fool, David Charleston," I told myself, turning back to my duties. How long was I going to keep jumping every time I spotted someone who looked vaguely like Megan? The answer seemed simple. I'd keep doing it, until I found her. This group took well to my introduction, relaxing visibly. A few even asked me questions. Turned out that the family in my group had fled New Cago years before, deciding that the convenience wasn't worth the tyranny. Now they were willing to give it another go. I told the group about a few jobs in particular I thought they should consider, then suggested they get mobiles as soon as possible. A lot of our city administration happened through those, and the fact that we had electricity to power them was a highlight of New Cago. I wanted people to stop thinking of themselves as refugees. They belonged to a community now. Introductions done, I stepped back and let the people enter the city. They started forward, trepidatious, looking at the towering buildings ahead. It seemed Roy had been right. This group was more promising than ones who had come before. We were accomplishing something. And I frowned. "Did you talk to that one?" I asked Abraham, nodding to a man toward the rear of the departing group. He wore simple clothing, jeans and a faded T-shirt, and no socks with his sneakers. Tattoos ringed his forearm, and he wore an earring in one ear. He was muscular, with distinctly knobbed features, and was perhaps in his late 30s. There was something about him.
"He didn't say much," Abraham said. "Do you know him?"
"No." I narrowed my eyes. "Wait here." I followed the group, pulling out my mobile and looking at it as I walked, feigning distraction. They continued on as we'd instructed them, making for the offices at First Union Square. Maybe I was jumping at nothing. I usually got a little paranoid when the professor wasn't in town. He and Cody had supposedly gone out east to check in with another cell of the Reckoners. Babiar or someplace. "Prof been acting weird lately." At least, that was how we phrased it. Weird was actually a euphemism for, "Prof is secretly an epic, and he's trying hard not to go evil and kill us all. So sometimes he gets antisocial." I now knew three epics. After a lifetime of hating them, of planning how to kill them, I knew three. I'd chatted with them, eaten meals with them, fought beside them. I was fond of them. Well, more than fond, in Megan's case. I checked on the walking group, then glanced at my mobile again. Life was annoyingly complicated now. Back when Steelheart had been around, I had only needed to worry about... Wait. I stopped, looking back up at the group I was following. He wasn't there. The man I'd been tailing. Sparks! I pulled up against a steel wall, slapping my mobile into its place on the upper left front of my jacket and unslinging my rifle. Where had the man gone? Must have ducked into one of the side streets. I edged up to the one we'd just passed and peeked in. A shadow moved down it, away from me. I waited until it moved around the next corner, then followed at a dash. At the corner, I crouched and peeked in the direction the shadow had gone. The man from before, in the jeans and wearing no socks, stood there looking back and forth. Then there were two of him. The twin figures pulled away, each heading in a different direction. They wore the same clothing, had the same gait, the same tattoos and jewelry. It was like two shadows that had overlapped and broken apart. Oh, Sparks. I pulled back around the corner, muted my mobile so the only sound it made would come through my earpiece, then held it up. "Tia, Abraham," I whispered. "We have a big problem." 2. "Ah," Tia said in my ear. "I found it." I nodded. I was trailing one of the copies of the man. He'd already split twice more, sending clones in different directions. I didn't think he'd spotted me yet. "Mitosis," Tia said, reading from my notes. "Originally named Lawrence Robert, an unusual epic with, so far as has been identified, a unique power. He can split into an unknown number of copies of himself. You say here he was once a guitarist in an old rock band,
Yeah, I said. He still has the same look.
Is that how you spotted him?
Abraham said in my ear. Maybe. I wasn't certain. For the longest time, I'd been sure I could identify an epic, even when they hadn't manifested any powers. There was something about the way they walked, the way they carried themselves. That had been before I'd failed to spot not only Megan, but Proth as well.
You categorize him as a high epic? Tia asked.
Yeah, I said softly, watching a version of mitosis idle on the street corner, inspecting the people who passed. I remember some of this. He's going to be tough to kill, guys. If even one of his clones survives, he survives.
The clones can split as well? Abraham asked.
They aren't really clones, Tia said.
I heard papers shuffling on her line as she looked through my notes.
They're all versions of him, but there's no prime individual. David, are you sure about this information?
Most of my information is partially hearsay, I admitted. I've tried to be certain where I can, but anything I write should be at least a little suspect.
Well, it says that the clones are all connected. If one is killed, the others will know it. They have to recombine to gain one another's memories, though, so that's something.
And what's this? The more copies he makes,
the dumber they all get, I finished, remembering now. When he's one individual, he's pretty smart, but each clone he adds brings down the IQ of all of them.
Sounds like a weakness, Abraham said over the line.
He also hates music, I said. Just after becoming an epic, he went around destroying the music departments of stores. He's known to immediately kill anyone he sees walking around wearing headphones or earbuds.
Another potential weakness?
Abraham said over the line.
Yeah, I said. But even if one of those works, we still have to get each and every copy. That's the big problem. Even if we manage to kill every mitosis we can find, he's bound to have a few versions of himself scattered out there, in hiding.
Sparks, Tia said. Like rats on a ship.
Yeah, I said. Or glitter in soup.
Tia and Abraham fell silent.
Have you ever tried to get all the glitter out of your soup? I demanded. It's really, really hard.
Why would there be glitter in my soup in the first place?
Abraham asked.
I don't know, I said. Maybe the other boys dumped it in there.
Does it matter? Look, Tia, is there anything else in the notes?
That's all you have, Tia said. I'll contact the other lorists and see if anyone has anything more. David, continue observation. Abraham, make your way back to the government offices and quietly put them on lockdown. Get the mayor and her cabinet into the safe cells.
You going to call Prof? I asked softly.
I'll let him know, she replied. But he's hours away, even if we send a copter for him. David, don't do anything stupid.
When have I done anything stupid? I demanded.
The other two grew silent again. Just try to curb your natural eagerness, Tia said. At least until we have a plan.
A plan. The Reckoners loved to plan. They'd spend months setting up the perfect trap for an epic. It had worked just fine when they'd been a shadowy force of aggressors, striking, then fading away. But that wasn't the case anymore. We had something we had to defend now.
Tia, I said, we might not have time for that. Mitosis is here today. We can't spend months deciding how to bring him down.
John isn't near, Tia said. That means no jackets, no tensors, no harm sway.
That was the truth. Prof's epic powers were the source of those abilities, which had saved my life many times in the past. But if he got too far away, the powers stopped working for those he'd gifted them to.
Maybe he won't attack,
Abraham said, puffing slightly as he spoke into the line. He was probably jogging as he made for the government building.
He could just be scouting, or perhaps he is not antagonistic. It is possible that an epic merely wants a nice place to live and will not cause problems.
He's been using his powers, I said. You know what that means. We all did, now. Prof and Megan had proven it. If epics used their powers, it corrupted them. The only reason Prof and Edmund didn't go evil was because they didn't use their powers directly. Giving them away filtered the ability somehow. Purified it. At least, that was what we thought.
Well, Abraham said. Maybe...
Wait, I said. Down the way, Mitosis strode out onto the steel street. Then reached back to take out a handgun he'd had tucked into the waistband of his jeans. Large caliber Magnum, far from the best of guns. It was a weapon for someone who had seen too many old movies about cops with big egos. It could still kill, of course. A Magnum could do to a person's head what a street could do to a watermelon dropped from a helicopter. My breath caught.
"I'm here," Mitosis shouted. "For the one they call Steel Slayer. The child who supposedly killed Steelheart. For every 5 minutes it takes him to reveal himself, I will execute a member of this population."
We hope you enjoyed this free preview of Mitosis, a Reckoner story, book 4 in the Reckoners series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.